absolutely wild as Vern Gagne's all-star wrestling goes coast to coast and continent to continent. The greatest wrestlers in the world.
He may be an apprentice carpenter, but I guarantee you he is a seasoned ring veteran.
I've been hit with bar stools, bar rags, bar maids.
I'm talking to you.
They're scared that Hulkamania's still running wild.
Oh, yeah. I got a big fat wife and 9 kids at home, and I gotta feed them.
And take a look at Jesse the Body in real life.
Open your hand once if you would.
You want to see it?
This is absolutely unbelievable. Totally, completely out of control.
He's coming in over the top. Hey, look out!
That's right. Hey, look out, because we are here. We are AWA Unleashed. We are the preeminent podcast dedicated to telling the stories and reliving the memories of the American Wrestling Association. My name is Chris Tubbs. Welcome in to this week's show. I don't want to do all the work. I'm going to let these guys do the work. Hey, Mick. Hey, Joe.
Hey, Chris. How are you, my friend?
I'm good. Hello, can you tell? I moved the camera angle. So you can actually see me.
Well, can you go back? Move it back to where it was?
Wow. We got our own lights out match here. That's great.
It's a death match.
Good one. Good one. Good one. How's everybody doing?
I'm good. I'm good.
Good deal.
It's funny. We were just talking before the show, but yet now we're actually asking everybody, how you doing? Before it's just busting balls, but now we're like, how you doing? You guys good?
Obligatory bullshit is what
Say that five times fast.
So let's get beyond the obligatory bullshit and move on to the real bullshit.
Okay. Before we get going, we do have some news to address. Mick, I'm gonna let you take it from here, and then we'll get into the fun stuff.
You know, this is getting to be kind of an old deal, and whenever we can take a breath and have a week where nobody passed, it's kind of a saving grace for us. We can't say that this week. First of all, as we're taping this program, Chris Markoff was laid to rest in Minneapolis just yesterday, again, as we're taping. But no sooner do we get that news than we have two more big names in professional wrestling that passed away this week. And neither of them was a real surprise, Chris, but still, when you get the news and you kind of reflect on how many we've lost, then it's a different story. Ole Anderson was the first one who passed away. Ole had been sick for a long time, and I don't think that there are too many guys that you could say were more influential in the business over the years than Ole Anderson. I mean, this guy's impact on wrestling. Alan Rogowski from the Minneapolis St. Paul area, trained by Vern Gagne, was the original The Rock in the AWA. Went on to team up with his kayfabe brothers, Gene Anderson and Lars Anderson. But one of the original four horsemen, one of the real deal four horsemen, and I think Ole's legacy to the business, it is immense, but he was such an old school guy, and he hated the bullshit. He hated the way wrestling was going to the more theatrical Las Vegas Showtime production.
He hated the sports entertainment aspect of it, like old school wrestling.
That's exactly right. And talk about an old school wrestler. Hard-nosed, no nonsense. His promos were believable. He went out and he sold tickets. And Ole Anderson, I think when you talk about, again, the most influential guys in wrestling of all time, Ole Anderson was right up there.
Deserves the credit. I read Arn's tribute to him online, and he was spot on. Ole called it as he saw it. you know, is I think the polite way to say it, didn't put up with any bullshit.
No.
Spoke his mind for better or for worse, ruffled some feathers, but old school, hard-nosed Minnesota wrestling guy, part of the Minnesota Wrecking Crew, and you know, rest in peace. You left your mark in professional wrestling.
No doubt. And another gentleman that didn't quite have quite the impact that Ole did from a long-lasting standpoint, but certainly he made his name in wrestling, and that is Mike Jones, a.k.a. Virgil. Wrestling fans, of course, know him as the lackey to the million-dollar man, Ted DiBiase, one of the greatest turns in wrestling history. Well, when Virgil finally had enough and turned on Ted, started his career as Soul Train Jones in the southern part of the United States and got a real break. I have heard that the name Virgil, which he was given in the WWF, was a shot at Dusty Rhodes, who, of course, was Virgil Runnels. I mean, far be it from me to suggest that WWF would ever stoop to something like that, but that's what I heard. But nonetheless, what's sad about it, Chris and Joe, is that later on, Virgil kind of became a footnote, kind of a comedy.
He became a punchline.
Yes, exactly. And it was too bad. But again, a guy who had been ill for a long time, had a series of strokes, dementia was setting in. But hey, you got to say, for the time and the place, Virgil made it in the business.
He helped make the Million Dollar Man probably the most hated talent in the WWF during that time.
Yeah, yeah.
He played his role well.
Yes, he did.
It is sad in the later years that he became a meme. Yeah. You know, where the lonely Virgil, he's there at a convention and, you know, nobody around him. It's sad. It's sad. He, much like Ole, hey, he did leave a mark in professional wrestling. He deserves his spot in memories. And again, rest in peace, Virgil. May you finally get that $1 million.
Yeah, go get that F money, as he said. And the turn was one of the best stories going, because it was a slow burn and it kind of had that old school feel to it, where it was just that denigrating. And then all of a sudden Rumble 91, and I know this isn't AWA, but you look at the story arc and it wasn't a hot shot. It was, you really wanted to see this man get his comeuppance, and Ted DiBiase gave him everything. And I mean, Virgil, he capitalized on it for that bit. He might've been one of the top baby faces in WWF.
Yeah, rest in peace, both gentlemen and Chris Markoff. Again, it was a rough couple of weeks for wrestling fans.
One of something that you said, Chris, just want to touch on it before we get into today's shows. You're talking about the turn, the slow burn of Virgil and the Million Dollar Man. It's funny how wrestling is cyclical, or much like Hollywood, they just do a remake, because it had a lot of the same flavors as Ray Stevens' turn.
Sure.
You know, so it's just, that's wrestling.
It gives fans a reason to be invested in the character, in the person.
There you go.
Make us feel their plight. I want to feel sorry for somebody. Like, I want them to kick somebody's ass.
Yep.
You know?
Yep.
Yeah, so. And like anything else in wrestling, Joel, like you've said, eventually it's like my wardrobe. Hang on to it long enough and it's going to be back in style, at least for a couple of weeks.
Well, except your underwear, where you just don't change it.
Why bother?
Why wear any to begin with? I mean, go commando.
Well, no, okay, it. Okay. Now, let's save this for a live chat. Okay, let's save this for a live stream. And oh, by the way, if you actually do join us on a live stream, ask me about my Virgil story, and I will tell you about my Virgil story, because it involves a bathroom and Orlando. Just I'm just gonna say, and a friend of mine. It wasn't me. It was a friend of mine and Virgil in a bathroom, and I'll you can
Let's leave it there.
Yeah. Before we get going, I do have to say thank you to everybody who has been signing up as a member on our YouTube page. We really, really appreciate it. Just go to the YouTube, go to the join link that's in the description. And by the way, Big Bowler 2200, email me at awaunleashedpodcast@gmail.com. Email me your real name and a mailing address so I can get you all taken care of. So Big Bowler 2200, email me and I'll get you all taken care of. But if you want a little something in the mail, and you want access, we love the membership. We guarantee that you are going to enjoy being a member of our channel. Okay, so this is a show, guys, that we let everybody do the work because this is another fan feedback show. We've done top tag teams. We've done top 25 overall. And today is best big men. But when we're looking at the list, tell me, what is the criteria that you guys put out there for the best big men in AWA history? I'll let you go, Mick, and then Joe, and then we'll get into it.
With this one, it was a little more limited, I think, when you're talking about big men. I mean, I know that Joe, expressed a valid point about our overall best wrestlers in the AWA, where the criteria was kind of like scattered all over the place. Best big men, first of all, the main criteria was that they weigh a build weight of 275 pounds. And I say a build weight. Ladies and gentlemen, this is wrestling, where a one-hour draw can go 42 minutes. This is wrestling, where a guy can be billed at 218 pounds for his entire career when his driver's license says 180. This is pro wrestling. So the build weight of 275, I looked in some programs, and this was the customary build weight. Joe and I talked before we went on the air. There are a couple on there, come on. 275 with what? The Statue of Liberty on his back? But nonetheless, we don't skew the votes. We leave them up to the people. And there were some real surprises. It's amazing what people remember when you say, hey, give me your top 20, whatever it is. And I believe it's the top 20 today.
Yeah. I looked at some of the names, and the first thing I thought of was, how are they considered a big man? I mean, I guess it's all a matter of perspective. But this is what the fans voted for.
Yeah.
This is truly what the fans voted for. We did not put in our 2 cents, although we're putting in about a buck and 2 cents right now.
We're going to get change back for that opinion too.
Yeah. So let's roll them out. I will say ahead of time, there's one name on here. It's like, who in the hell is this? We'll come across that. But to begin with, going with this is the fans' vote. And I get this. People submit a couple of names and just to be smartasses. And yeah, I might have been called a smartass or two in my day, Karch. I'm talking about, let's start the list with two guys. There's nothing honorable here about these two. We've brought them up on the show 1,000 times. And that's probably 2,000 times more. Silo Sam.
Here's the reason that we're even talking about these guys. The category was big man. And you can't argue with the fact that, Silo Sam was a big man. He was about 17 foot tall. And, his talent, talent and Silo Sam are not next to each other in the dictionary. Let's just put it that way. But we wanted to put up a couple of guys because we got a few honorable mentions. Silo Sam, for all his size, probably the tallest guy in AWA history, did not get a vote. If he did, some smartass snuck it in there. we've talked ad nauseum about Silo Sam and the other guys. So let's put his picture just so we can emphasize the fact that our viewers and listeners actually, they know what they're talking about. What they
I do have one thing to say about Silo Sam.
Yeah.
Why does he look like a character from Little House on the Prairie? I feel like he's going to go out to Walnut Grove with Michael Landon or something.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I mean,
he would have been better off, and so would all the wrestling fans.
Okay.
No doubt about it. Let's put the other clown up there.
The ring technician.
Oh, boy. I mean, you talk about Luthes. You talk about Vern Gagne. You got to put Rocky Mountain Thunder in that conversation. He's built
a. Ever a 60 minute Broadway between those two guys?
Between
Silo Sam and.
Yeah, Rocky there Mountain was Thunder, a 60,
who,
yeah,
who, by the way, sounds was. He sounds like an off-brand pop, by the way. He sounds like something you get at like an off-brand cheap. Yeah, let's go get some Rocky Mountain Thunder to have with our peanut butter and jelly sandwich.
You know, Chris, there actually was a 60-minute Broadway between the two of them, and it went 12 days. thank you, ladies and gentlemen. You did not vote these guys anywhere near even honorable mention. Appreciate that.
They did get something right there.
There, well, yeah. So there we go. Right. Now we're going to get into the true honorable mentions, and we just have a couple of them. So Joe or Chris, have at it.
No, I will let. I will put the. I loved him in Married with Children. One of Al Bundy's, one of Peg's relatives, King Kong Bundy.
King Kong Bundy, or Boom Boom Bundy. As he was called in certain areas, in the AWA for a cup of coffee, teamed up with Jerry Blackwell in the 1980s to face the Road Warriors when Jerry had turned babyface. Certainly on the overall landscape of professional wrestling, Bundy is an all-time great big man, notorious for asking the referee to give his opponent 5 counts. On the mat instead of the customary 3. But again, garnered some votes, but not quite enough to make the top list.
And it's got to be because he wasn't here long enough. I mean, for one short little run. But imagine that tag team, Bundy and Blackwell. That legitimately had to be 900 pounds, maybe 900 pounds between the two of them.
Yeah,
I think he was ready. Bundy, wasn't he billed at like 500 and something when he was here, Mick?
I don't recall. I just remember that because of King Kong Brody, they had to refer to him as Boom Boom Bundy. And but again, you know, cup of coffee in the AWA, but memorable for a lot of people.
Yeah, and he should be an honorable mention.
Well, boy. Wow. Big Joe LeDuc. Look at that. I wonder if Stan Hansen mistakenly figured that was Vern's belt. And, drove his truck over the forehead of Joe LeDuc several times. LeDuc had a pretty extensive run in the AWA. He came in as a babyface, but then he turned heel. And his matches with Mad Dog Vachon were absolutely legendary. Joe LeDuc, a serious tough guy. And look at that forehead. Dear God Almighty, I would say that once or twice Joe bladed over the years. But again, memorable, but not enough to crack our top 20.
Another good honorable mention. My first question when I see that forehead, those are pretty fresh.
Mm-hmm.
Why do you need to bleed? I mean, do you really need to bleed that much in a match that you're going to cut yourself 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, you know, 7, 8, 9 times? It's almost like he became sadistically attracted to it rather than needing to do it.
Jimmy Snuka comes to mind. Snuka used to blade like that. He would take out the blade, and it was like he was scratching a mosquito on his forehead over and over and over and over. And it was just ridiculous. I never understood it either. You know, just one slice should be enough. But Big Joe LeDuc, great all-time wrestler, but not enough for the top 20.
And got just a couple more honorable mentions here, guys. Big Scott Hall.
This one is kind of perplexing to me, and I think this goes to what we've talked about on the previous show. Scott Hall hit his stride when he became Razor Ramon. When he was here in the AWA, teaming up with Kurt Hennig, yes, he was a tag team champion. Yes, memorable. But Scott was still pretty green around the edges and, you know, kind of lumbered around the ring on occasion. But memorable enough that, you know, I put him on the list of the people to choose from for our viewers and listeners, and he got enough votes for honorable mention.
An interesting point comes to mind is when the fans do submit these votes, do they submit them based on the AWA time or on their career? That might be the criteria, but but will somebody who's sitting back and they see Scott Hall and they know him, you know,
as Razor Ramon,
it's like, in their minds, are even in the back of their minds, are they still saying, yeah, he should be there?
I'm sure they are. I'm sure there are a lot of people that do that.
It's hard not to, though, especially for the younger generation like me. Like, okay, yeah, I can look at Scott Hall and say he's a big dude. And yeah, I remember him as Razor Ramon and then, you know, Scott Hall, part of the NWO. But then you're like, well, I feel like I should put him on this list because of how good he was later on in his career.
You're right. You're absolutely right, Chris. And I try to make it clear at the beginning when I put the polls out that this is during their AWA time. The question is, who are the best big men in the history of the AWA? Mm-hmm. It's AWA specific. So, yeah, good point, guys.
All right. And last honorable mention here, guys. And this is someone I always enjoyed. Like, I don't know. I just always thought he had a really good look. Just always came off as just somebody I did not want to fuck with. And that is Ox Baker.
Ox Baker. If there was ever a prototype heel, Ox Baker is the guy. When he was in the AWA, I've mentioned this before, and this surprised me that he got enough votes for honorable mention. Ox Baker was more of a WWA, Dick the Bruiser, Indiana, Chicago guy than he was the AWA. When he came here, his first run, he was kind of more or less a glorified enhancement talent. And then he left the territory. And, of course, his later years in the AWA towards the end of the run when he was managing the Russian Brute, a shell of the man that he used to be. So it surprised me that Ox was memorable enough to enough people for his AWA run. But this may be exactly what you guys talked about, that maybe people are thinking of the Ox Baker from other territories. But nonetheless, Big Ox, certainly memorable.
And one of the scariest human beings that I've ever met in my life. Not that as a person, but when that walks into a room, you can't help but think, run. I mean, he just had that look. But then when you started talking to him, I really enjoyed working with Ox. He was nothing but pleasant and respectful to me as a young kid in the business, and he had been there forever, even though he was already, you know, hunched over and didn't have the size that he had early in his career. He still was a very menacing appearance.
All right, let's get into the top 20 here, guys. We're about 23 minutes in, and if we go, you know, about an hour-ish, that's okay. Let's go with number 20 here, guys. And that is one of the famous families, that is Butcher Vachon.
I was happy to see this. Butcher was not the greatest technical wrestler, needless to say. Came in probably around 300 pounds. In his day, Butcher was a big, big man. And, of course, we got enough old school fans out there that remember his teaming with Mad Dog Vachon, his brother, former AWA Tag Team Champions. Butcher has had some health issues over the past couple of years, but he's still here. God bless him. He's about 90 years old and, in my opinion, a legend in pro wrestling. Nice choice, guys.
It's funny, you know, you got Butcher and Mad Dog. You look at them side by side and you can see a resemblance. However, Mad Dog had to do one of these to his brother. You know, there's the size difference from the same gene pool. Pretty funny.
Number 20. Butcher Vachon.
Let's go to number 19 here, guys. And it's someone that I think we recognize him as a promoter in other places. I don't associate him with my age group with the AWA, but Cowboy Bill Watts.
Bill Watts in the 1960s in the AWA was over huge, both and actually into the early 70s, both as a singles and tag team wrestler. We talked about Ole Anderson's influence on the business. Cowboy Bill Watts, the same kind of old school promoter and mindset that Ole was. Huge babyface here in the AWA, even had some championship matches with Vern Gagne. Legendary and certainly deserves to be in that top 20 of the big man. He was about 300 pounds. Bill was a big, tough guy.
Yeah, Chris, I'm with you. Watts was before my time as well. Certainly know of him through watching old videos and hearing stories about him. But for me, more as a promoter, as you said, he ran his territory for quite a while. Watts deserves to be on the list. I'll give him that.
Absolutely. Yep.
Someone here, guys, that I know we've talked about periodically, but just very good collegiate wrestler, from what I understand. Chris Taylor.
Well, here's the deal on Chris Taylor. Chris, of course, wrestled in the AWA in the 1970s. He came in with a lot of hype. And, you know, Vern Gagne signee out of Iowa State University, Olympic wrestler. Chris was a legit 450. So when you talk about the best big men in AWA history, from an in-ring talent standpoint, I don't know that Chris was one of the best. He did not do a lot of stuff other than the power moves and using his size. But when you talk about AWA big man, how can you leave Chris Taylor off the list?
Not only was he big in girth, but he was a pretty tall guy as well, wasn't he, man?
Yes, he was. He was a monster. Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean,
what a sweetheart of a guy, too.
The 450 almost sounds light. If you compare, let's say, a Jerry Blackwell. I mean, Jerry was 5'10", maybe. You know, 5'11", and he was billed at 486. Chris was, what, 6'4", 6'5"?
I would say at least, yeah.
Only billing him at 450, it could have put him well over 500 pounds by wrestling standards.
There you go. But Chris Taylor, God bless him, left us much too soon.
Yes.
Let's go to another one here, guys, that left us much too soon. I see the resemblance in who he became later on in life, but Coquina Maximus, who you guys, well, we know what he became later on. I'll let you guys set it up, but tell me about his run here in Minneapolis.
The future Yokozuna, and Joe, you and I talked about this before we went on the air. You look at him there and he's big, but he had to be at least a third, maybe twice the size, my God, when he went to WWE as Yokozuna. But in the AWA, he was Coquina Maximus. And he came in towards the end of the run again. And I believe, if I'm not mistaken, he was managed by the Sheik, by Sheik Adnan LKC. Perhaps his most memorable time in the AWA, they did an injury angle with him and Greg Gagne on television. And Coquina delivered a splash to Greg's leg, I believe, on the outside of the ring, and it put Greg on the shelf for a while. But even then, he was very, very talented. And I think one of the most talented big men in wrestling history, not just in the AWA.
Certainly remember him in the AWA in the angle that you were talking about, Mick. Much like... I'll compare the situation to Adrian Adonis. Saw the versions of him in the AWA, and then when they went to the WWF, shall we just say that you've got headhunters and then you've got cannibals, and both of them went to the cannibal buffet and ate a couple of people to achieve their WWF girth. Coquina was one of them. Or shall I, we say Yokozuna. Sadly that he went too young, but I gotta say, when you're that big, you can't expect to live too long. I mean, the body's just not made to withstand that much internal punishment. So
maybe you're still kind of,
what's that?
Great talent.
Oh, no doubt. No doubt. Extremely good.
Yeah, I didn't understand really how good he was until, you know, after he had passed. And then I come to appreciate what he did for a guy his size, even though I just saw him in, you know, WWF. And I don't really remember the Coquina Maximus. Well, I do vaguely. All right. Here is Luke Bryan.
I'm sorry. I've never heard. Who is this guy, Mick?
All right, the old guy will go back in the catacombs and explain who this is.
Yeah, I had it down as Luke Bryan, but I know that's not right.
Not quite. Not quite. Well, you can tell because there's no guitar there. That would have been your first clue. Oh, other than that, I think it's, you know, pretty close. This is actually Big Luke Brown. And what amazes me is that Luke Brown got enough votes to crack the top 20. There apparently are a few old school AWA guys out there like myself. Luke Brown, who was here in the AWA in the early 1960s under the name Man Mountain Campbell. He left the AWA, came back as Big Luke Brown in the late 1960s. His real claim to fame was not in the AWA, although he did have a fairly extended babyface run, teamed up with guys like Igor and what have you, you know, the big man babyface tag team. He actually teamed up with Jake the Snake's father, Grizzly Smith, and they formed the Kentuckians tag team in the southern part of the United States. For his AWA run, it wasn't exactly a cup of coffee. It was moderately memorable, but enough people voted for him to put him on the top 20. And I will explain to people, our top 20, the top tier of this list was pretty top heavy with a lot of the votes. And that's why you might see guys on here. How did they get enough votes? Well, you know, they were scattered enough so that they made the top 20. But Luke Brown in wrestling history, much more memorable as one of the Kentuckians.
I got to ask, Mick, if it was your list, would he be on the top 20?
No.
Okay. But not enough said. And
would he have been like an honorable mention, though?
If I can think of other AWA big men that I would have put ahead of him, even for honorable mention. But, you know, hey, people remembered him and they voted for him. So,
yeah, that was a really good question, Joe. Really, really good question. Here's another one here, guys. I mean, how can you not say Ivan Koloff?
Oh, Ivan Koloff was not the tallest guy in the world.
I tried to be diabolical with it, but I couldn't do it.
Look at him. And one of the nicest men you would ever want to meet outside the wrestling ring, and one of the greatest of all time. And Ivan, of course, when he came to the AWA, he had come in. He was probably about 300 pounds, and he was not that tall of a wrestler when he came in. When he left the territory and went down south and then teamed up in the NWA area with Nikita Koloff, etc., he had lost a lot of weight, and he looked good. He had trimmed down. He was a big, burly guy in the AWA, came in right after his run with Bruno Sammartino out east. He was managed here by Stan Crusher Kowalski. And Ivan had a great, great run here, matches with Billy Robinson and Vern Gagne. And just a legend in wrestling.
Let me ask you this question, because you mentioned he was coming off of the feud with Sammartino out east. Were they able to, did he come in hot because of what he did with Bruno?
Yes, he did. And it was one of those times where the AWA would make reference to the fact that he was a world champion in
another
territory.
That was my question,
yep.
Because I know sometimes stuff like that isn't really recognized. And if he was really, you know, that hot with Bruno in the East Coast, and we know what Bruno was in the East Coast, I just figured it would make sense to capitalize off of that. But, you know, sometimes you don't necessarily think that they're going to.
No, they absolutely, the iron was still hot. with Ivan Koloff. And again, if you met this guy outside the rink, what a gentleman.
Mick, you brought up that he was about 300 pounds. If I'm remembering correctly, it wasn't that he was, shall we say, overweight in terms of just respectfully a Playboy Buddy Rose type of body, but he was just thick all the way through. Am I remembering correctly?
Absolutely, you're spot on. He was. You wouldn't look at Ivan Koloff and say there's a fat guy. I mean, you would say that is a big, tough guy. Let's not mess with him.
Sort of. And you brought up Bruno earlier. They had a similar body style. They were just really thick guys all the way through.
Yeah. Bruno was a little bit more muscular, but Ivan was just a big, tough SOB.
Yep. Uncle Ivan.
Let's move into the top 15. And you had just mentioned this name here, Mick. And let's just get to it. Stanley Kowalski.
Stan Kowalski. Don't call him the big K. He hated that name. Stan Crusher Kowalski.
I wasn't going to do it. I was not going to do it.
Out of deference to Stan, no, he hated it. He wore the K and, because he was forced to. In AWA wrestling history, you know, we've talked one half of the former AWA first ever tag team champions along with Tiny Mills. Stan always used to say to me, for some reason, he always told me what he weighed. And I remember that later on, after he was kind of managing in the AWA, Stan was proud of the fact he would say, I'm down to 260 or I'm down to 265. So you can imagine Stan probably weighed 3, 3 1/4 in his heyday here in the AWA, but legendary as a singles and tag team wrestler and then as a manager of Kobayashi and Ivan Koloff. And we're going to do a show on Stan Kowalski because a mention in the top 20 all-time big men does not do Stan justice.
I got to ask, Mick, so did he ever say why he hated the Big K moniker so much?
Yeah. Basically what it was, Joe, and I don't recall, I always get confused on this point. It was either because Killer Kowalski was in town or Crusher. I think it was more the Crusher was here, and Stan was billed always as Stan Crusher Kowalski. So Vern made the change. They wanted to put Crusher over as Crusher with a C, and Stan had to do, you know, the big K business. Stan would always come out and say, that's Crusher with a K. You know, to emphasize the fact
that was good, by the way. That was really good.
Oh, hey, listen. But I love the guy. I absolutely, one of my wrestling heroes, Stan Kowalski.
Fortunately, I was able to work with him. But unfortunately, it was when he was doing his Big K's Corner on wrestling. A treat to work with. But he would always just get out of the... When we do the segment, you'd get out of it and said, that damn Big K, I hate that. But I never asked him. I was, green, wet behind the ears, and this guy was a legend. I wasn't going to ask him, well, why the hell do you hate it so much? Now I know.
King Kong, Brody, Boom Boom, Bundy, and Big K. You know, all AWA.
Crusher Blackwell, Crusher. Yeah.
There you go.
All right, let's go to number 13 here, guys. I don't know that I've been actually keeping up with the numbers. But let's get into number 13, if I can find him. I just had the picture. There he is. Maybe one of the funniest guys that I've ever met, just so different than the persona. Nord the Barbarian, Big John Nord.
I think John would be tickled that he made the list with some of the legends.
I am a big fan of John Nord, the person. He is legitimately just, I love John Nord, the person. I'm putting it out there.
One of the funniest guys ever. I mean, we've heard his stories, Chris, in Waterloo and then locally as well. John Nord, of course, who idolized Bruiser Brody. I can't imagine where you would see the connection between the two.
I'm not seeing it.
Yeah.
Not seeing it.
John, of course, came in as a heel. Here in the AWA, but once he did the television commercials and started putting people through windshields like
and
Mike
people
Gelfand,
still remember those commercials.
Oh, like, of course they do.
They still remember those.
And they're 30 years ago.
Yes.
John Nord, a carbon copy of Bruiser Brody. They actually wound up feuding in some territories, and John will talk about how great it was to get into the ring with his hero. But I'm with you, Chris. From a personal standpoint, ain't nobody like John Nord.
When he and Brody tagged up, I got to say I marked out a little bit because I enjoyed the Brody gimmick so much. To get a replicant of it was very cool. And nothing but good things to say about my time working with John. A pleasure, a treat, and it was great to reconnect with him years later at the AWA reunion. Now, I've seen him several times since, so always a treat. Right, and, by the way, deserves to be on this list.
Yes, no doubt.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, go to number 12 here. Okay, so over the last couple of weeks, we've had the conversation about individuals and tag teams, and sometimes they're different parts in lists. Sometimes they make the outs, you know, the honorable mention. Sometimes they're in. Both of these individuals did make the list, but they made them at different times. And the first, you're so good at what a rush.
Careful, careful.
Ow, I can't do it.
Yeah,
the late Mike Hegstrand, Road Warrior Hawk. I can't do anymore.
Again, one of these guys, you know, all, of course, he and Animal build out of Chicago when they were both Twin Cities guys, trained in by Eddie Sharkey. I had the opportunity to work with Mike Hegstrand, Road Warrior Hawk, on several occasions, not only the AWA, but also on the AWF Warriors of Wrestling. What a guy. I absolutely loved Mike Hegstrand. What you see with Mike, or what you saw with Mike, is what you got. He was a big, tough, no-nonsense guy, great sense of humor. You know, it's Christmas is just another day to beat people up, ladies and gentlemen, according to Mike Hegstrand.
I never heard that one. What promo was that in?
They were doing a Christmas card in the AWA, and, you know, they put it over as Christmas. And he said, it's just another day to beat people up. Mike, again, probably a victim of his previous lifestyle on the road in the AWA, and the guy's heart eventually just gave out. But love the guy, and he deserves to be on this list, one of the best big men in AWA history.
Both members of the Road Warriors deserve to be. Personally, I would have put Hawk over Animal because of the promos. Hawk's promos were phenomenal. His one-liners, what do you think this is, romper room? I mean, just I could go on and on. In fact, one of the pay-per-views that I produced, the entire episode was on the Road Warriors. That might be a good watch along.
Oh, yes, definitely. God bless you, Mike. We miss you.
Yep.
Oh, great. Yeah, one of the all-time greats. We're still on the outside of the top 10 looking in. Here is number 11 here, guys. And again, this is someone I remember more from his return in the WWF as a babyface, and that is the late Big John Studd.
Big John Studd was not a great wrestler, but he wasn't bad. And when you talk about the big men in wrestling, and, you know, they're sometimes kind of pigeonholed and limited in what they can do, John Studd was a good talent. And in the AWA, of course, he, you know, famous for the hard punch, put Mad Dog Vachon on the shelf. He had a feud with Baron Von Raschke. Big John Studd was the real deal. And when he went to New York, of course, under the managerial reigns of Bobby Heenan, doesn't get much better than that. John Studd, John Melton, again, another one that left us way too soon. His son is a wrestler. And from what I understand, outside the ring, John Studd was one of the nicest guys you would ever want to meet.
What I recall about Big John Studd was, he, in my youth, he was the first, not big man, but huge man. tall. And you got to keep in mind that this was at a time where you had the Crushers and the Mad Dogs of the world, even Nick Bockwinkel. Well, Nick was my height. He was about 6'3", but the Mad Dogs and the Crushers were under that. Even Vern was 6 foot. So height-wise, you didn't have that imposing presence. Big John Studd, in my youth, was the first, like, holy shit guy, really tall. And I remembered loving when Andre came in finally, because John Studd was here for a while. Andre came in for a short period of time every year for the Battle Royal run. And so when Andre came in, it's like, yeah, Big John Studd's not that big anymore. But he truly was and deserves to be on the list.
Yes, sir.
All right, let's get to the top 10 here, guys. And you just mentioned him. Don't even need to say, you just one word, Andre.
When you talk about wrestling history, I think most people would say the greatest big man of all time is Andre the Giant. And I think people have to be realistic and say that's from an attraction standpoint, and that Andre was so singular in that regard. From an in-ring standpoint, especially in the later years, and it wasn't his fault. He was all crippled up by then. Andre was not a great worker, but his size got him over huge, and the people that he feuded with made all the difference in the world. I've said that one of the worst main events, sadly, that I've ever seen was Andre and Nick Bockwinkel. They went to a 60-minute draw here in the Twin Cities in the AWA area. Andre got hurt early on in the match, and it was basically laid all over Nick for the next 50 minutes. It was pretty dreadful. Andre was not your classic wrestler by any means, but again, from an attraction standpoint, Andre the Giant, probably the most famous big man in wrestling history.
I got to say, and this was post-AWA, but when Andre turned heel, I really dug it. He really came across as just his eyes and just his look made him, to me, look like a legitimate heel. But you're right, Mick. He really could not work in the ring.
Yeah, Andre, to me, was the first thing I remember, again, of Andre was in WWF, the Piper's Pit, and coming out and ripping the cross off of Hogan. Let me ask you guys this, because he was over as a babyface, but then over better heel or babyface?
I'm with Joe. I liked his heel run, but I think if you ask the wrestling fans, certainly he was far more over as a baby face. And, you know, that may have been a longevity thing. Personally, with me, it's kind of a pick 'em.
Likewise, I think Andre needed to be a baby face early in his career because he was not a mainstay in any one territory. He was in for a while, and it's tough to be an ass and be a heel and, you know, get booed and stuff, but in Andre's case, I think it would have been tough to have him as a heel and go from territory to territory and not be able to stay for a sustained run.
And just as a footnote, Chris, the first time Andre came in, he was brought in as a mystery partner of Bull Belinsky. And I believe they were going to be wrestling Larry Hennig and Lars Anderson on television.
Oh.
It was billed they were going to wrestle at the auditorium. But Bull brought this guy in, and he, of course, comes into the TV screen and obliterates the screen. And this was the first time people had seen Andre, and he wasn't 450, 500 at the time. He was more straight up and down, but still, it's like, holy shit, where did this guy come from?
I just love his interviews. He'd have a beer can in his hand, and you literally, not like this with a beer can. You could not see the beer can.
Incredible. Similar to you at the Croatian Hall.
Never heard of it.
Oh, man. All right. I don't even have a comment for that. That was so good. Number 9 here, guys. I don't think of him as a big man. I just think of him as a big, tough, strong son of a bitch, and that is Ken Patera.
Strong as a boulder.
I am not going anywhere near that line because I know what you're doing, and I'm not going to go all Barry Darso on Ken Patera. I have said that Ken is one of the most underrated heels in wrestling history, and I have to think that these fan votes were based on the heel Ken Patera. He was here early on in the 1970s when he first broke in out of the Olympics as a babyface. Nowhere near cut like this. You talk about that big, big lurking guy, Ken Patera, because he was a weightlifter, even had that big belly when he first got into wrestling. So Ken probably came into the AWA, I'm going to guess, probably about 350 or so, and here he's about 275. Ken Patera is a legend, and it's that simple.
Yeah, he looks really, really good right there. Like, that is all muscle.
We've had a lot of comments on our social media about how people hated Larry Zbysko so much. I'm going to put Z and Patera in the same type of category in terms of they were so good at being heels that people legitimately hated them. And Ken Patera, yeah, he was that good. And again, when he got bought by Adnan and brought in the Sheik's army, I despised the guy. I really did. And as I've said millions of times on here, Ken, you did your job well.
It's funny how we're talking about a lot of these as being villains, you know, because I kind of get the feeling with what we're talking about with these bigger guys being the bad guys. It just seems to work. I believe we are at number 8 here, guys. And, you know, we're about 50 minutes in. We can go a little bit over because I'm not streaming on certain platforms anymore. We had his partner earlier, but talk about John Laurinaitis, Road Warrior Animal.
That would be Joe Laurinaitis. We want to make that distinction. Yeah,
oh, did I say John?
Yeah.
Yes,
oh,
yeah.
Fuck me. No, 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 no. I'm so sorry. Oh, my God.
Hey, it happens. You know, it starts with the letter J. I think especially at this point in history.
Something on my phone. Oh, my God. I am so sorry.
That's all right. Joe Laurinaitis, Road Warrior Animal. The bigger of the two Road Warriors, I think Joe was billed at about 290, and I don't think that would be too far off. As you said, from a promo standpoint, Joe, Hawk was probably a more entertaining promo. But look at Animal right there. there were not a lot of times when he put that makeup on that you would get even a grin out of Road Warrior Animal. Imposing, tough, strong. Again, another Minnesota guy who was billed out of Chicago, legendary in the business. I think Road Warrior Animal, and Hawk for that matter, when you're talking about the best big men in wrestling history, I don't care what territory they were in, they deserve absolute top 10 status.
I've said my feelings about the Road Warriors and how, to me, they, along with Hogan, transformed professional wrestling back in the day. I don't need to say it again, but I couldn't agree with you more, Mick, that they not only deserve to be, they should be, they have to be, and thankfully they are in the top 10. Well, actually, Hawk was 12, but in the top 15.
There you go.
Yep, and again, very clearly, Joe Laurinaitis.
Yes.
Oh, my God, that was the shit.
No pun intended.
Oh, man. Well, hey. Only one of those was dynamic, and dude, that's not what I was going for.
Oh.
All right, let's go to number 7 here, guys. I don't think I'm going to screw this name up. Remember the Heenan family, one of the reasons why it worked. Big Bad Bobby Duncum.
I am very happy that Bobby Duncum rated as highly as he did with the wrestling fans, not only because I was just a Bobby Duncum fan, but again, a member of the Heenan family. What you saw with Bobby Duncum, Joe, you've mentioned this on our shows before. He was a big, tough country boy, and there was no pretense about him. But Bobby Duncum, for his size, could move. And I mean, he was agile in the ring from a technical standpoint, probably more gifted than a lot of the big men in the business. Had a real decent run here, teaming up with Black Jack Lanza and then, you know, Ken Patera. Bobby Duncombe deserves to be on this list. Nice going, folks. You ace this one.
I laugh because we've got, I believe he's signed with Power Tone. I got to check the roster list. But Greg Gagne tells me when he talks to Bobby that it's nowadays that he really hasn't changed. He's just gotten older, and it appears that he just puts more tobacco in his mouth because it's just so difficult to understand him. He's got that Texas, real deep Southern Texas drawl, and mix in some chewing tobacco in his mouth, and sounds like me at times after I leave some establishments that I've never heard of before.
God.
What?
Nothing. Keep moving, Chris.
Nothing. He said it before. He makes like, fuck that. I'm going to pass. I'm going to pass. All right. All right. Let's go to this one, guys. He's on every list you can possibly imagine, but I don't think there's anything that he has not done. The influence of Dusty Rhodes. Yeah. And he is on the outside. He's number six.
Looking in. Legendary doesn't even come close to describing Dusty Rhodes, and his best years were when he left the AWA territory and of course became a mainstay in the NWA. He came in as a heel. We mentioned this before with Dick Murdoch, here in the AWA area, had some great feuds with the Crusher. And Dusty, by the time he left, he was a full-fledged babyface. From a charisma standpoint, there is nobody in the business like Dusty Rhodes. And certainly when you talk about big men, I know Dusty was about 300. I know that very, very well for a fact. So there's no hedging of size and weight here. But legendary to a fault, and could have been rated higher, was in the AWA for a couple of years, but still monumental impact.
Charisma is an understatement, both in the ring and on his promos. I would hope and think that if we ever did a top 10 or top promos ever, that Dusty's got to be near the top, because him on the microphone, just incredible.
Yeah.
Oh, and by the way, two phenomenal workers for Sons.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, the whole Gold Dust gimmick is, I could do without it. But he's embraced it. But, yeah, I mean, his two sons, phenomenal. Great legacy that you left for us, Dusty.
Yeah, and I will say the shitty gimmicks that they got, the Gold Dust and the Stardust and everything, they made it work. And, I mean, Cody Rhodes right now, one of the biggest baby faces in the business. And I mean, every time you hear about Cody Rhodes and anything that's going on, guess what? Dusty's always a part of it, no matter what the promo is. They're always talking about, you know, your dad this, your dad that. And it comes off as believable too, which I think really is a testament to Dusty Rhodes. All right. Number five here, guys.
Here we go.
Yeah. And I have to say, I know he's a sex symbol, but I feel like he's more of a cruiserweight than he is a heavyweight. And let me say this. I'm going to put him up there.
Light heavyweight, not cruiserweight, but George Clooney.
George Clooney. Again, this was a poll about the best big man in the AWA. There, Baron Von Raschke at least has a little bit of size. I think as the years went on, and maybe even into the days when he was tag team champion with Crusher, I'm not sure, Joe. You and I have talked about this. The criteria was 275. I don't think so. Baron was a big, tall guy. He was a big man. 275 might be pushing it, but The fans spoke, and they consider Baron a big man. And if you're going to put Baron on any kind of a list in the AWA, Once he's on that list, he belongs there, and he's a legend.
What do you feel his build? What do you feel his real weight at his peak? What do you feel his legit shoot weight was?
I'm going to err on the side of caution and say maybe 250, 260. I don't know for sure. That might be pushing it a little bit. I know, Joe, you think he might have been a little bit lighter.
Yeah, I mean, you're in the neighborhood. You're close to it. I'd say 240, 250. I will say this about Baron. One of my all-time favorites outside the ring. I mean, even inside the ring, but one of my favorite human beings. Jim has been nothing but a dear friend to me over the years. So I say that by following it up with, I don't exactly, let's just say that he wasn't exactly a gym rat. You know, Baron wasn't cut. He wasn't shredded. He was just Baron, a great amateur wrestler who transformed, and, you know, Mad Dog gave him his gimmick and he transformed his way. You know, Jim was, he was just a normal guy. He was a school teacher later on who couldn't get hired because they thought that he would turn into Baron if one of the students would piss him off.
Really? So, like, is that...
That's a fact, yes.
Yeah. Really? They wouldn't hire him because they thought that he would turn into...
Well, they didn't know. You know, I mean,
this was post kayfabe.
Yeah. And remember, God. I mean, this guy, you know, imagine him driving the monorail while you're looking at the monkeys at the zoo. This guy is running the monorail. If he gets pissed off at you, the monorail goes over the edge of the mountain. I don't know. But the real deal, even schooled Billy Robinson, when Billy got a little cutesy with him early on in the training days, Baron took him to school. So we love the Baron.
Without a doubt.
All right, let's go to number four here, guys. And I feel like the last four that we've got, all legit badass mofos, who any one of them I feel could have been number one. And oh my God, look at that face. Look at that.
That's not King Kong Brody. That's Bruiser Brody. I don't care what kind of spin you put on it. The fact that he's number four, he could have been number one. I mean, they're all interchangeable. His AWA runs were sporadic, but he came in on occasion and made a huge impact every time he did. And legendary in pro wrestling. Again, one of these guys, do you call him an AWA wrestler? Yeah, maybe when you compare him to longevity-wise to some of the other people on the list, but he was the world traveler from Japan to every corner of the world, and there is nobody that will ever duplicate the character, the persona that was Bruiser Brody.
One of my all-time favorite gimmicks. I said earlier about Ox Baker. He scared the shit out of me when I was a kid, and then when I met him later on. Bruiser Brody, when he asked me to give him a ride home after Wrestle Rock back to his hotel room, and he sat in my 1984 Dodge Charger, and I'm looking over at him thinking, you know, look, we were just talking about Baron. I was 20 years old, and I'm driving Bruiser Brody, sitting in a small little hatchback, looking over thinking, don't piss him off. You know, but he was a normal, nice guy. I had nothing but good things to say about my time working with Frank. He was a gem. And Mick, you're right. For me personally, he would have been my number one AWA big man.
Guys, I've mentioned before, the first time I interviewed Frank up in Winnipeg, I was scared shitless. And I said, what are we going to talk about? What would you? And he said to me, you lead, I'll follow. Don't worry about it. And it's like, holy shit. Am I dreaming this? Great guy. And the tragedy of Brody, unequaled.
Quick, who did he work for, though? I can't remember. Oh, I worked for the Sheik. He pays me good money.
Yep.
Love it.
Man, I wish I would have seen the heyday of Brody. Oh. I mean, just the videos I see, just they make me miss him, and I feel like I missed out.
Do you remember, I think it was an All-Star Wrestling taping where it was Brody and Blackwell, where somewhere in Wisconsin, I can't remember where it was. And it was not Whitewater.
Okay. Okay.
But the two, Brody and Blackwell, Brody had just come back into the territory and they had about a 25 minute, we'll call it a match. And I'm not kidding. I want to say maybe a minute of it was inside the ring. They were literally going throughout the entire arena, hitting each other with whatever that they could find. The fans were spread out all over the place. Chairs were in disarray. I think when we got that match back into the studio, usually I would just, okay, I remember the match and just shuttle through. Okay, I got to edit it here and there. I watched that entire match from start to finish twice because it was just that entertaining for me.
And they were very good friends outside the ring.
Yeah.
When Brody died, Jerry was devastated.
Yep.
All right, let's go to number three here, guys.
Oh.
And somebody else that I felt was kind of a little scary at times.
Bad Only if you had a championship belt, yep. You didn't want run over.
Well, here's the thing. He was an optometrist nightmare because he would never go, you know, anywhere. Stan Hansen couldn't see a foot in front of him. And when he would come to the ring swinging that cowbell and that rope, it was scary. He didn't care who got in his way, from the popcorn vendor to a photographer. Stan Hansen, along with Bruiser Brody, interchangeable, big, tough, rugged, no-nonsense, former AWA champion, didn't take shit from anybody, let alone Vern Gagne.
Didn't he and Brody, weren't they big in Japan as a tag?
Oh, huge. Oh, I mean, huge. That's not even the word for it, Chris. You can't imagine. Road Warriors times 10. They were that over. And you watch some of those
popular tag team in Japanese wrestling history.
Watch those Japanese wrestling tapes of Brody and Hansen teaming up. Stan Hansen, one of the all-time greats, no matter where he appeared. And, of course, his matches with Rick Martel, I've said, they were great, great, and underrated matches.
Well, and his promos. You know, I know we're running short on time, but my favorite one-liner in his promos: I got a big fat wife at home and 9 kids, and I gotta feed them. And then he whacks Larry Nelson, destroys the ESPN set. Oh, Stan, you deserve to be on this list. And it was a treat interviewing him for Power Town, finding out how he came up with everything. When he comes out to the ring and does the hook 'em horns and yells up, and he yells, "You!" So I asked him, what was that? He goes, well, when he was young, I was, being a smart ass, and it was a shot towards all of the old guys. When he did that, he was yelling youth because he was one of the young guys in the business.
Wow. Great story. Great story.
How many times did he crack Larry Nelson?
Oh, too many to count. WrestleRock, when he was walking out to the ring, he pushes Larry down and kicks Larry in the back. And I asked Larry the next day, did it hurt? He goes, I didn't even know that he kicked me.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Larry had dark hair before he got in the ring with Stan. And then all of a sudden he turned completely gray. Okay. Top two.
Yep. Let's go from that Larry to another Larry. And I would love to do a feature on Larry the Axe Headed, because I want to do a show on Larry.
We will, and the fact that Larry is number two on this list delighted me. He got an awful lot of votes. I've said it so many times, you know, I'm a Larry Hennig mark. Larry was the real deal as well. He was big, he was tough. Nobody fucked around with Larry Hennig. I mean, it was that simple. His baby face beginnings in the AWA as a Vern Gagne trainee. And then, you know, of course, the student turned on the teacher and they feuded in and out of the ring legitimately for many years. Larry Hennig is a Hall of Famer. And in Minnesota wrestling history, he is right up there with the Vern Gagnes of the world. I'm telling you, Larry Hennig, with all his accomplishments, is still, in my estimation, underrated. He was so freaking good.
That he was. Quick little story. So later on, after Larry's wrestling career, he was working with Buddy Wolf to do a couple of things. Buddy had some sign ideas, and they came over to my house to talk about some design ideas, doing some commercials and so forth. And when they came over...
Did you do it in your living room?
It was in my basement office.
Okay. Sorry.
But
I need to know because that's important for the story.
Yeah. But my mom was over. And the reaction that she had when he first came in was she hated the guy because she remembers Pretty Boy Larry Henning. Took maybe 2 minutes and she was giving him a hug. Couldn't talk about how nice he was, and same with Buddy Wolf. But just a little side note story on Larry. I got nothing bad to say about him, despite the fact that first time I met him, he was pissing on the set at a Christmas party.
Hey, you can't hold that against the guy. Patera did it at Cauliflower Alley.
No, as Greg Gagne said, what are you going to do? Are you going to stop him?
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. Love Larry. Larry the X.
And number one, guys, no surprise. The Mountain from Stone Mountain, the great Jerry Blackwell.
This didn't surprise me at all.
No, not at all.
When I put the big man poll out there, Jerry was one of the names. It's a given. When you got a 470-pound guy doing that standing dropkick, and then to do such an incredible hated heel to babyface turn, Jerry was agile in the ring. He could take the monkey flips. He could take the backdrops. And as I said, he could throw the drop kicks. To me, in my estimation, absolutely the greatest big man in wrestling history, AWA legend par excellence.
I've got many memories of Jerry, and yes, he deserves to be on the list. I would have put him number two with Brody as number one, but I would direct the graphics in Vegas early on in my days with the AWA, and we had two different weights for Jerry, 472 and 468. And so I asked him one time, I go, so you're 472 last time, you're 468 this time. Are you trying to lose some weight or what? He goes, nah, I just burped.
Brilliant. And as I mentioned before, when Al DeRusso, the ring announcer, said to Jerry, how much do you want to be billed? He whispered in his ear, and Jerry said, 468 plus the jackup. Why do you need a jackup at a quarter ton?
Oh.
God love him. But
Man.
Clear number one. Clear
yeah.
Number.
And I think, yeah, to me, like the top five were all, I think they were all on par.
Yeah.
They were all on par. So well done, you guys. I know we wanted to keep it to about an hour. We went a little over an hour. That's fine. What are we doing next week?
Next week, I believe, are we going to go into either or? This is your call, boss man. Do we go the Q&A route? We got a lot of questions in the back. Or do we go to Vern Gagne's all-time greatest trainees? You make the call.
We haven't done a Q&A, and I know that those kind of have a tendency to add up. So we want to do a Q&A,
okay,
and then the top 10 trainees, and then maybe a show about Wahoo after that.
Perfect. Perfect.
Because I know that Wahoo is one of those that I wanted to do, and also Larry. So let's make those the next two profiles that we do. But, yeah, let's go Q&A, the top, 10, 15 trainees by Vern?
Yep. Yep. Trained about 150. So let's go top 15.
Okay. And this is going to be your guy. You're coming up with the list, right?
I'll give the list to the fans and they make the votes.
God damn, again. Okay.
All right. Hey, don't let Luke Brown throw you.
I'm just saying, I mean, I appreciate, hey, power to the people, people power. There's my second John Laurinaitis.
They do a lot. Yeah. John Laurinaitis. The people do a lot better job than we do. So let's turn the show over to them.
It really is. I mean, legitimately, guys, this is the show that I want. I want everybody to feel involved. This is a show that's designed for you guys. So absolutely give you guys that opportunity. Let's get some shout outs, take care of some more business, and then let's hit the Rizzo'd.
My shout out this week goes to a gorgeous, gorgeous lady. And I believe the first female ring announcer of national prominence, my good friend, Mike McGurk, out there in the Oklahoma area. What a sweetheart. And Mike, Facebook friend, legendary in the business. I'd love to get her on the show as well. Hello to Mike McGurk.
My shout out goes to a former wrestler and faithful listener to the show, Rich Martin. Thank you for being a part of AWA Unleashed.
And I do have to say that I thought Mike McGurk, I thought she was the cat's meow as well.
Oh,
so just to let you know, if we ever do,
speaking of cats, where's yours, Mick? The only reason I tune in.
Did she not get booked this week? I mean, I thought I booked her. Maybe.
If I tell you where she is, somebody's going to call the ASPCA. So let's just move on to your shout out.
Okay. I'm going to go with Michael Frame. He was a member of the Body Slam level. Now he went up to the pinfall. Thank you, Michael. I appreciate it. And you should be receiving your little goodie letter from me in the mail momentarily. So if you haven't already, this has been fun, guys. And again, I know that we're kind of going a little bit over an hour with it. I'm not streaming on a couple of platforms anymore, so we're kind of tweaking where we're going. So we're giving ourselves a little bit more flexibility. Hopefully you guys have enjoyed it. It's a lot of fun. I do want to ask you guys, if you have not joined the membership level, highly, highly recommend because the pinfall level, that is where you're going to get the watch-alongs. We've got two of them already out there. We've got some special interviews. We've got the live streams. We've got a whole bunch of things that only pinfall members are going to have access to. And it's $5 a month. I mean, $4.99. You really can't beat that, because we're going to give you things that you can't get anywhere else. That fair?
No question.
And that $5 a month, from what I've been told, that's cheaper than a beer at the Croatian Hall.